This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, March 18th. I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. Coming up, as lawmakers in Juneau move the discussion towards what new revenues are needed to cover a nearly $4 billion deficit, we'll ask the governor about fiscal ideas and the political price of moving them forward.
I will take the political hits as a result of fixing Alaska. I will take the political hits of making sure Alaska has a bright economic future for the next 50, 100 years. And because I did not run for this office to keep the office, I ran for this office to do the job.
We'll check in with a new air taxi service in the skies around Iliamna. The city of Dillingham is growing concerned about erosion, closing the distance between the Wood River and the sewage lagoons.
Yes, I'm very concerned about this, because erosion takes, it's real fast, you know, and I'd like to address this issue now instead of later, so we don't have a oops moment, you know.
Plus, many young folk in the region have been catching our eye in their various successful endeavors lately, including at the Poetry Out Loud competition this week in Juneau.
For a while, the tired waves vainly breaking seem here no painful inch to gain. Far back through creeks and inlets making, come silent, flooding in the main.
Those stories are coming up after a look back at some of the week's news. Setting a new record for the last great race on Earth, Dallas Seavey pulled into Nome just past 2 a.m. Tuesday morning.
Heck yeah!
And this became Seavey the Younger's fourth win and his third in a row.
I was kind of surprised to see how fast the time was, but I had it in the back of my mind that this just might be a record breaker.
Indeed it was. He finished in 8 days, 11 hours, 20 minutes, and 16 seconds. His dad, Mitch Seavey, was not long behind to claim a second-place finish. This year's Iditarod was marked by a strange criminal attack on Ali Zirkel and Jeff King's teams by a drunk snow machiner outside of the village of New Lotto on Friday night into Saturday morning. That young man has been arrested. One of Jeff King's dogs was killed. Others were injured. This week, the Federal Subsistence Board opened up same-day airborne hunting of caribou on the Nooshigak Peninsula herd for qualified users. Biologist Andy Aderman says this is the latest effort to increase the number of animals that get killed in that oversized herd.
The bag limit for the feral hunt has increased to 3 caribou per hunter. The season has been extended to April 15th, and same-day airborne take of caribou for the federal hunt has been allowed, and then that would go through April 15th.
At about 1,400 animals, biologists say the herd is probably twice the size it should be. The state of Alaska also expanded the boundaries of its special registration hunt targeting the same herd, now allowing any registered hunter in the state to hunt on the entire peninsula. The National Transportation Safety Board said this week that the Ute Air pilot who crashed and died in the Queefluck River last May had carbon monoxide in his blood at the time of his death. Blaze Highlander was piloting a maintenance check flight after the Cessna 207 had been serviced, and investigators suspect the aircraft engine may be to blame for the toxic gas. A full report is due out in May. On Monday, the state Senate voted on a state operating budget that goes $63 million deeper in cuts than the version in the House. Part of that is due to $100 million in executive branch cuts that aren't yet allocated. The two houses will resolve the differences between their versions of the budget through a conference committee before taking a final vote. Both of Alaska's U.S. senators said they support the majority leadership decision not to bring President Obama's nominee to the Supreme Court up for discussion or a vote of consent. While Judge Merrick Garland is widely regarded to be moderately to the left, both Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski said they would prefer to see those votes and discussions happen after the presidential election in November. All basketball teams from Bristol Bay were defeated in the opening rounds of their state tournaments, save for one. The Lady Angels easily topped Cordova and advanced to the semifinal round tonight. Coach Heath Lyons spoke with KDLG News shortly after the Thursday win.
They actually did really well. The last 3 or 4 days, we've been waking them up at 6 a.m. and, getting them breakfast so they're up and ready to play in those early games. And they came out and actually defended very, very well. And the ball went in the hoop, too, so that was even better.
Yesterday, what many consider an opening bell for the commercial fishing season in Alaska was heard over VH radios around Sitka Sound.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, open. The Sitka Sound Sacro Fishery is now open. Sacro Fishery is now open. This is Department of Fish and Game. Standing by on Channel 10.
That's Fish and Game biologist Dave Gordon, who turned the competitive fleet loose from 2:45 till 5:05 p.m. yesterday. The season quota is set at 14,741 tons. And in another harbinger of spring, KDLG News found this boater at the Elecnagik boat launch this week, making an unusually early effort to wet his line on the open waters around the Woodtickchick State Park.
I'm a little bit hard up for a trip on the water. Been all winter, you know. I'm really getting tired of TV on the weekends, so let's see if I can't scare up a rainbow or something pretty early. I'd be surprised, but still better than TV.
Still better indeed. More on this week's news can be found at our website, kdlg.org. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond. I'm Dave Benninger. Alaska continues its march towards a new fiscal future. Both bodies in the legislature have passed operating budgets, and now the talk will be how to pay for them. Oil and other revenues will leave the state close to $4 billion short this year. Here's what the debate sounded like this week. First, here's Craig Richards, who is Governor Walker's attorney general and is spearheading the centerpiece of the governor's plan to turn earnings from the permanent fund into a stable source of revenue.
You know, Alaska for 30 years lived off very generous petroleum revenues. Due to prices and production declines, we no longer can. So we've built up a huge savings account to essentially live off of and the later years, and we're at those later years. So to me, that's why it's all about you need to draw from your retirement assets in a sustainable manner, because we need to live off that money for a very long time.
Of course, the governor combined that portion of his plan with a host of new taxes, including on income, fishing, mining, alcohol and tobacco, and so on. They're all separate pieces of legislation that are not yet finding much traction in the legislature. Here's House Speaker Mike Chenault when asked about the governor's proposals.
I certainly don't expect that we're going to pass every revenue measure that the governor has proposed, but I think that all of them at least deserve a hearing and at least deserve to be talked about in either a committee or multiple committees like they have been. And, you know, sometime between now and the end of the session, we'll find out whether there's enough support to pass any one of those revenue measures, or possibly all of them.
Again, that was Mike Chenault in the House, but there's a different tone over in the Senate. The Republican majority is pushing back against the idea of new taxes, even suggesting constituents say they want the budget cut more before talking about any new revenues. Senator Pete Kelly was noticeably prickly during a Tuesday morning press conference and had this to say when also asked about Walker's proposals.
It's important to know the Senate is the Senate, and the House is the House, and the governor is the governor. We're different branches of government. It's interesting what he wants, and we may coincidentally deliver it, but we do not work for him, and we have our own plans, and we will work with him. We already are working with him, and I'm glad to. We need to. There's been some tendency on the part of the administration to start throwing around orders to the legislature, and we just don't respond to that.
Well, let's hear now from the governor himself. Bill Walker joins us from Juneau. Governor Walker, good to have you on this program. Thanks for the time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Let me ask first for your reaction on the House and Senate budgets that you've seen. It looks like they attempted to cut a little bit further, slim things down beyond what you had proposed.
Well, and that's part of the process. We understand we're respectful of the process. We submit something, and then they work on it as well. We've made significant cuts over the past couple of years, and so they've added to that, continuing to reduce the spending side.
Now the big question becomes how to pay for them. We still have a deficit, no matter how much they were able to cut. You started that discussion for the state. You put a few shots across the bow with talk of an income tax and other taxes, restructuring the permanent fund, capping the dividend checks this year, and other aspects. Remind us again about your plan. What do you think is the best way forward?
Well, the best way forward is to have a sustainable plan, so we're never back in the situation again, making sure we have something that survives and goes on for the next many years, and not tied to what the price of oil is this week. And that's a mistake that we've made over the years. We've not gotten off of the percentage of reliance on the price of oil. So we are looking at a more broad-based approach, recognizing that, you know, we have a close to a $4 billion deficit this year, and continuing to reach out and then pay for that out of savings is just not the answer, because we only have a few years of being able to do it that way. So we can't do that. So we're clearly in our plan is definitely not to cap the permanent fund. We've not considered that as an option. But we have looked at restructuring a bit on how the earnings of the permanent fund corpus, how that is dealt with. And so that's what we're looking at, making some changes there. And again, if we don't make any changes to what we're doing now, in less than 4 years, the entire dividend program would go to zero and remain there. So we're trying to keep the permanent fund permanent. And with the way we're restructuring them things, it would be that way. It would not be the average we've received in the permanent fund checks over its inception has been about $1,100. And so it would be back in line with that, probably on the lower side of that, $1,000 this year. It would drop down a bit after that. But we need to continue that program, that concept, to just have, 3 more years of that, and then it goes to zero is not acceptable to us. We need to make it permanent.
When you talk about using earnings from the permanent fund, some have described this as raiding the permanent fund itself. Others believe it will lead to smaller dividends that takes a toll on rural Alaskans and others. Do you see it that way? It looks like the easiest or the most likely source of the amount of funding the state needs are those earnings. What are your thoughts?
It is, and of course, by law, you cannot go after the permanent fund and use any of the corpus of the fund at all without a vote of the people. So there's no chance that anybody would be able to remove funds from the corpus of the fund itself. From the earnings side, anything we do on the permanent fund is going to have an impact on rural Alaska. There's no question about that. That's why we are introducing other taxes that would not impact rural Alaska. Or impact them perhaps less to create a sort of a balanced approach to the revenue situation.
Governor, I've heard all of you speak about this being a historical point in Alaska, or for Alaska here, and lately I've heard the late Governor Jay Hammond referenced kind of from both sides. Some have said that he warned against such a day when lawmakers would come for some of the permanent fund, and others who said, no, he saw this rainy day, and it's here now. What do you think Jay Hammond would say about the ideas that you've offered if he were still alive?
Well, in 1976, Governor Hammond gave a speech to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. He said, if we don't change our economy and stop funding government from a non-renewable resource, oil, if that's all we're going to do, this day will arrive. And unfortunately, we ended up with an economy funded 90% by the price of oil. So he warned of this, and he was absolutely correct. The day did arrive, and so the day is now. So this could have been changed, corrected any time in the last, since 1976. So he certainly warned of that. And again, I certainly believe the intent of having a permanent fund was to reach a point that the government could be help fund it a bit as a result of those earnings, and that the key is to bring down the cost of government, and we've been working aggressively on that with the legislature. But the other key is that we need to fund education, public safety, transportation, those kinds of things some way. And so the most stable piece right now is a portion, not the entire, but a portion of the earnings, not the corpus, but what the earnings are from the permanent fund.
All right. Let's talk politics about it for just a minute. Some of your critics have said that you spent too much political capital already, perhaps on the gas line, or that maybe you came into office without a good sense of how to play these politics yet, and that may be impeding your ability to steer this ship from the front. How do you answer them?
I think a professional politician would probably say you need to be politically correct in everything you do. And I was warned that don't talk about the permanent fund, don't talk about taxes, that's not politically correct. That kind of political correctness is what's gotten us to where we are today, because it may be politically correct, but it's fiscally irresponsible. So I have said, as I said in my State of the Speech, I will take the political hits as a result of fixing Alaska. I will take the political hits of making sure Alaska has a bright economic future for the next 50, 100 years. And because I did not run for this office to keep the office, I ran for this office to do the job.
One of those political hits might be you might have to, or you might choose to reject something that the legislature sends your way. Do you see a type of plan that they may send you that's not comprehensive enough, or that draws too much from savings in your mind that you would veto it?
Well, I'd love to see a plan. So far, I haven't seen a plan. I've seen pieces of plans, but I want to see the whole plan so we understand how it all fits together. Because, again, if you just do one piece at a time, the problem is that it disproportionately impacts different areas of Alaska, each piece of it. So that's why we need the whole plan.
All right, Governor, I can't let you go without asking. You're an independent now, but you were formerly a Republican. Do you see a Republican or even a Democrat candidate for president that you can lend your support to yet in this race?
You know, I am laser focused on Alaska, and I will remain that way. And so I have not stepped in or weighed in, I should say, on the national level on the race for president, just because I've got my hands full with Alaska right now, and I'll stay laser focused on what's best for Alaska.
All right. Plenty more months to get into that later. But Governor Bill Walker, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for coming on this program.
Thank you very much.
Listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond. Let's talk about sewage for a moment. The Wood River is coming quickly for the Dillingham Sewage Lagoon. Just how quickly, I got to see for myself on Thursday after I asked City Manager Rose Louetta for a tour to look at other more routine upgrades at the facility off Tower Road. Louetta explained what some of those are, many of which have been at the top of the city's capital projects wish list for years.
The aeration system in the lagoon needs to be repaired in one of the cells. The second cell has never aerated, period, that we know of. All the valves that controls the water in and out of the lagoon are underground, rusted, need to be changed. We also have the sewage line from the Housing Authority development there that's completely plugged. We've been trying to unplug it for...
Louetta says also there are pumps that need to be changed out at the treatment plant and that all the lift stations around town need upgrades too. Okay, much of that probably sounds like Greek to most of us, but suffice to say those are relatively expected maintenance issues with a 28-year-old sewage plant. That doesn't mean, however, that they're cheap.
We're looking at like about $2 million. We have a $2 million municipal matching grant, and we also have a $600,000 ANTHC grant that will help us.
Most of these issues have been on the city's radar for close to a decade, and Louetta has been keeping the city council apprised of the progress and the price tag. But at the past few council meetings, with an almost grave tone, she has expressed that a more urgent problem is developing. The riverbank nearest to the lagoons is eroding, suddenly very quickly. Public Works Director Francisco Garcia has been keeping a close eye on that, and as we walked towards it Thursday, he told me the Wood River is making clear and rapid progress towards the sewage lagoons.
And especially around September, October, when we get those storms come in, that's where we lose a lot of the property. It goes out into the bay, into the wood.
Let's go take a look.
Sure.
How many yards do you think it is?
We're probably right now, we're about 250, 270 feet away from their sewer lagoons.
That's it?
Yes, that's it. Yards, last year, we're about 350 feet.
That's feet or yards?
Feet.
Do you count yourself concerned about this at the moment?
Yes, I'm very concerned about this because erosion takes, it's real fast, you know, and I'd like to address this issue now instead of later so we don't have a oops moment, you know.
Yeah. An oops moment would be that the river reaches the lagoons and untreated waste leaches into Nooshigak Bay. That will be bad news.
Oh, gosh. DEC, EPA, everybody comes down on us, and it's a huge, huge, huge ordeal with all the sewage being pumped out instead of letting it settle throughout two lagoons. Yeah.
Before you file that away in the it'll never happen or we've got years to worry about that categories, the city says it just lost 200 to 300 feet of riverbank over the past 2 years. So now there's just about a football field-sized bulwark left between the Wood River and the sewage lagoon. And about half of that is made up of the loose soil that was dug out to make the lagoons, which Garcia doesn't have much confidence in.
And from here on down, that was the actual beach. This is all the mud that we're walking on now. And you can really see it when we came in here and cleared off all the brush from here. You can really see the mud. And then the beach. I mean, it'll eat this away. Once it gets to this soil here, this is just going to slough off easy.
Moving the lagoons back away from the river would be the most expensive and probably least feasible option. Garcia sees just two other choices.
Either putting a seawall against above the sewer lagoon and below it to protect the erosion, or put riprap and throw out some fingers out there to be able to catch some of the sand to build back up the beach.
Either one of those will cost millions. A seawall, likely tens of millions, and they're not necessarily a permanent fix. There is an existing seawall just around the corner from the lagoon at the bluffs at the end of C Street, but erosion is damaging both sides of that wall right now, which Loetta says is taking costly maintenance to upkeep.
It's like putting a Band-Aid on it, the erosion in front of the seawall. When those sheet piling were put in, they were put down 14 feet into the soil. In some areas, they're now at 3 feet. And so the Corps of Engineers comes through every year and measures them. And they identified about four or five areas that they were about 3 feet and recommended that we take out the soil behind the seawall to eliminate some of the pressure on the wall. And then we put some riprap in front of it, hoping that'll help it.
There are many theories about why Dillingham's riverbanks are eroding so quickly, but there is not much forward thinking about what can be done about it. Erosion's effects are noticeable from the hospital's crumbling perch, down Kanakanak Road, and now all the way around the corner of the Wood River. Loetta says erosion is clearly the most important problem the city faces.
Yes, no question in my mind. I think we've always known that this erosion was a problem. We put the seawall in. That was needed, otherwise the whole bluff there and houses there would have been over. As this river changes, and it changes all the time, erosion, if we don't secure this area, is always going to be a problem.
The city has ordered a survey of the erosion along the Wood River banks near the lagoon. So far, no estimates have been offered for what it will cost to fix the problem. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, back in a moment. Last week, Anchorage-based Zeta Air made its first charter run with a Piper Cherokee Lance delivering folks to Kakanak for the Winter Carnival. The flight was months and even years in the making. KDLG's Molly Dishner brings us this story.
Owner Danielle Troll grew up in Anchorage, a second-generation Alaskan. But she didn't have any pilots in her family and didn't know much about aviation growing up.
I was about 17, and I remember where I was standing, and I just thought, all of a sudden, that I wanted to be a pilot. The question in my head was, can women be pilots?
The answer, she learned, is yes. But even now, it sometimes surprises her passengers, too.
Mostly my funny moments are people commenting on how I'm a woman pilot. One time, a man from New Spear said, holy cats, I get to fly with a beautiful woman. It was really funny.
Troll went to UAA for a degree in aviation technology. While she was there, she got a job with an existing airline servicing Bristol Bay called Kamikaze.
Joel Jacko was flying groceries to the Neshigak area, and I started working for him shopping. And it was really cool timing because everything I learned at school, I could go and use. Everything stuck in my mind, and I got to apply what I learned, so that was really cool.
Between flying in the region and marrying into a family with roots in Dillingham, she got to know Bristol Bay a little better. And though Kamikaze changed hands and names a few times, and Troll worked elsewhere as well, the region stayed in her mind. So last fall, she bought what used to be Kamikaze, with an eye toward expanding the grocery delivery service to haul passengers.
My favorite part of my job is getting to know my customers. It's different than flying for a big airline because in that case, you don't really get to know your customers. You just fly a bunch of different people. But seeing a customer satisfied because, you know, I brought their birthday cake in time for their daughter, or, you know, they just got a box of fresh produce, or, you know, they had a good flight or something, that's really rewarding. there's so many factors that can prevent that from happening that aren't really in my control, like weather. So it just makes it even more epic when it works out.
Every passenger, every person waiting on cargo knows just how frustrating weather can be. Aside from the mountains of paperwork necessary to get certified for passengers, Troll says weather has been her biggest challenge this winter. But even that is just part of the job, she says.
Like, if everything's easy all the time, then you're not learning or improving. So every day I want to learn to be a better person and get better at what I do.
As for the name Zita, it means little girl. There was an Italian Saint Zita, a servant who set an example with her work ethic and perseverance and dedication to God. It's a story that's encouraged and inspired Troll, and one she hopes to emulate. In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
Take you home again. To your homey and the skies.
Finally, on this week's show, the state's annual Poetry Out Loud competition happened this week in Juneau. If it airs again on the 360 North channel, don't miss it. These young kids are awesome. One of them hails from our neck of the woods.
My name is Sam Blom. I'm a junior, and I go to school at Tenalian in Port Allsworth.
Now, to see Blom and the others, for that matter, perform these poems on stage, you'd think they've been gearing up for this competition since kindergarten, but he told me that's not the case.
Oh, I had no idea what Poetry Out Loud was a couple months ago, but my teacher, Mrs. Metzger, made my whole class memorize a poem and recite it, and I was chosen as the best in the school, so the video was sent on to the regional competition, and someone there decided they liked it, so I got a email one day saying I went to state.
So down to Juneau he traveled this week with three poems to recite in front of a warm and eager audience.
Our first competitor this evening is named Sam Blum, and he is representing Tenalian School in Port Allsworth. Sam Blum is a junior, and he lives in Port Allsworth, a small town of 200 people in southwestern Alaska. Ladies and gentlemen, please give me a round of applause for Sam Blum.
Say not, the struggle not availeth, by Arthur Hugh Clough.
I had to have a poem written before the 20th century, and that fit the bill, but I really liked the way it sounded and what it was about, just saying not to give up. There's a lot more that's going on than you know about.
Say not, the struggle not availeth. The labor and the wounds are vain. The enemy faints not nor faileth, and as things have been, they remain. If hopes were dupes, fears may be liars. It may be, in yon smoke concealed, your comrades chase even now the flyers, and, but for you, possess the field. For while the tired waves vainly breaking seem here no painful inch to gain, far back through creeks and inlets making comes silent, flooding in the main. And not by eastern windows only, when daylight comes in the light. In front the sun climbs slow, how slowly, but westward, look, the land is bright.
Again, that was Sam Blom. I asked him about the age-old fear of getting up on stage in front of people and hoping words do tumble forth from one's mouth.
Well, public speaking, I like public speaking a lot. It's always nerve-wracking before I get on stage, but once I get up there, I usually figure out I have a lot to say, and that's how I felt. I wanted to say what the poems meant to me and be able to share that with whoever was watching. And it was a little nerve-wracking being on TV. It was a different experience, and I enjoyed it a lot.
After I spoke with Blom yesterday, something about the way he had answered didn't sit right with him, and he called me back to say that he wanted to clarify a little bit about his gifts and abilities, which an honest observer would admit are many.
I really can't take any credit for anything, any success that I have or anything like that, because really the only reason that happened is because God gave me the gifts and abilities and put me in a place to do it in the first place. So it's not about me at all. It's just about him and his blessing.
We'll leave you with one more of his three poems from the Poetry Out Loud competition in Juneau.
Famous by Naomi Shihab Nye.
I like that one too because it was talking about being famous, not for doing anything spectacular, but for doing something that that you were made to do.
The river is famous to the fish. The loud voice is famous to silence, which knew it would inherit the earth before anybody said so. The cat sleeping on a fence is famous to the birds watching him from the birdhouse. The idea you carry close to your bosom is famous to your bosom. The tear is famous, briefly, to the cheek. The boot is famous to the earth, which is more famous than the dress shoe, which is famous only to floors. The bent photograph is famous to the one who carries it, and not at all famous to the one who's pictured. I want to be famous to shuffling men who smile while crossing streets, sticky children in grocery lines, famous as the one who smiled back. I want to be famous in the way a pulley is famous, or a buttonhole, not because it did anything spectacular, but because it never forgot what it could do.
Sam Blom from the Tenalian School at Port Allsworth, there at the statewide Poetry Out Loud competition this week. And Vivaldi to take us out. That's it for this week's show. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Band Beyond at our website, kdlg.org. Keep those news tips and ideas and feedback coming to news@kdlg.org. My thanks to the team here of Molly Dishner and Hannah Colton. I'm Dave Benninger. Spring officially starts Sunday. We'll see you back here next week.